Oh, finally, after all this time, I get to leave this bunker. Freak, how long was I away?
3 years, 2 months.
Has it been that long? Jeez, I hope the world's still there. Hate to come back to the surface and find out there's been an apocalypse while I was gone. Wait a minute. Why are there no people? Wait a minute. There's nobody. Wait, was there an apocalypse?
Unknown.
What? Wait, I was only gone for 3 years. What the heck happened? Hello? Anybody? Hello? Could have been a bomb or anything. Nothing's destroyed. In fact, that neighbor's lawn, not only is it not destroyed, it looks like somebody just mowed it. Wait a minute. So did aliens just show up and abduct everybody and mow their lawn? No, wait. No, this is crazy. Wait, there's a guy in a pizza delivery truck. Hey!
Dad, stop! Gotta get the pizza delivered!
So aliens abducted everyone, but we'd still deliver pizza? What? No. Wait, all the other restaurants are closed. So somehow pizza survived? What? No. Wait, no, this is still making no sense. Over there, there's a girl in that window. Hey, you! Hey!
Are you the food delivery guy?
What? No?
Oh, well then go away.
Look, I'm just trying to find out what happened here.
What, in my yard?
No, the city. This whole city, everybody's gone.
What, were you living in a bunker this whole time?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I just want to know what happened to this city.
It's not just the city, it's the world.
Oh my gosh, the world? This happened everywhere? What was it?
COVID-19.
Who? What? I mean, what is that, like Skynet or something?
Whoa, stay back. You can't come within 6 feet of us.
What? Well, why?
The virus will spread. We're social distancing.
Social distancing?
Yeah, you haven't heard of it?
Well, sure, I've heard of it. I mean, we do it at my parents' family reunions by default, but you know how those are.
No, see, everyone in the world has to do it.
So everyone in the world is being forced to social distance? Or else COVID will give you a virus?
Yep, but if we're lucky, we can change the curve.
The curve?
Yeah, you know, the curve.
What, of the Earth? What, like it changed orbit?
No, the virus.
The virus changed orbit? Okay, that doesn't even make any sense.
What? No. See, COVID made it so our world leaders had to declare that we can't travel, go to school, or even get married in groups.
So this COVID took our government leaders first and then locked everything. Oh my gosh, it is Skynet. Minus the nuclear war part.
What, the virus?
Never mind that. Did COVID destroy the major cities?
Well, not destroy them, but the news says some of the worst affected ones are like a war zone. It's been really bad on some of the big cities. New York, New Orleans, London, and countries like Spain, China, and Italy had it the worst before that.
So the AI is taking out our main world infrastructure. I knew it.
Why do you keep talking about an AI?
Did it start at NORAD?
No, in China.
China created Skynet? We must have messed up the timeline somehow. Oh man, this is all wrong.
What? No, the virus originated in China.
The one COVID made that can kill the humans?
Well, I heard it was a bat or something.
The AI is creating bats that kill humans?
No, someone on Twitter said it was bat soup or something. I don't know. Who knows if the news is even right on that one?
Soup is trying to kill humans. What?
No, the virus. And it's mainly been elderly people.
Okay, I am so confused now.
It's not that hard, dude.
Hey, I'm really trying here. Okay, let me see if I got this straight. You're telling me I leave for 3 years, and while I'm gone, some rogue AI named COVID appears. He takes over the world. He makes bats in China that can kill humans with soup. Then he attacks our major cities and forces our governments to keep us in small enclaves and takes away anything involving basic human rights. Oh, and he kills old people.
Okay, are you crazy or something?
You just told me bat soup started killing humans, and you're telling me I'm crazy.
That's not even what's going on. Hey, I get that it's frustrating. COVID made it so I can't graduate.
Oh, I see. So he shuts down all the schools, then he takes the elderly and reprograms all the kids. Oh my gosh. And I'm betting kids aren't getting sick at all, are they?
Well, not as much, no.
See what I mean? Complete takeover. He's destroying everything systematically. Knowledge, travel, misinformation through the news.
Well, you're definitely right about the news.
Wait, except, okay, hold on. So how come the pizza guy can still travel?
Well, technically all food delivery can still move around.
What is this, Death Stranding?
Look, just go home and do what the president said and shelter at home. That's all you can do.
What, go home and shelter like we live in City 17? No thanks, that's not how I roll.
There's no AI! Look, hopefully it'll all be over in a few months.
Oh, okay, so that's how long we have till COVID ends us all. You just want to sit back and wait to die.
To die? Screw that. I just want season 2 of The Mandalorian and get more Baby Yoda.
Baby Yoda? There's no Baby Yoda in season 2 of what? It's not like they made a Star Wars TV show.
Actually, you know what? Never mind.
Okay, that's it. I'm not sitting back for it to just be over in 2 months. No thanks. I am fighting back.
Against what?
Skynet or COVID or whatever the AI is calling itself this time around. We're taking this planet back right now. This is the moment we start the resistance.
Oh, I should probably let you know, the world's out of toilet paper.
Ah. Okay, never mind. We're dead.
Welcome back to the 65th episode of Through the Aftermath. I am Sean, and with me, as always, is Jonathan. How you doing, Jonathan?
Doing good, and I'll bet everybody out there is like, dude, okay, all the stuff happening out in the world, you know, Disney buys everything, you know, Baby Yoda, but nobody in the world thought, wait, Sean and Jonathan, is this a rerun? Am I hearing new words? Are there new Star Wars words going up the screen right now? Yes, they are.
2017?
I know, it's been like so long, and we actually have a lot to explain there. There has been some a lot happening on both our sides, and mine in particular. It's funny, I actually was off the grid pretty hefty there because of health issues, and yeah, if you want, I can actually kind of explain that.
Yeah.
So to kind of explain why Johnny disappeared off the map. So you guys may have remembered, and I don't remember if I talked about it too much, but I want to say I touched on it. Was I have an issue with diverticulitis, which for those of you who don't know what that is, it's kind of like appendicitis, except it's not as easy. They can't just like cut your appendix out when it gets infected. It's in your intestine, in your colon. So like if you get sick, they can't really do anything about it because it'll just kill you, and it's pretty life threatening. It's actually spooky stuff. I didn't know anything about it until I first got diagnosed with about 10, 12 years ago. But anyways, it had been in my life here and there in the past. Well, about 3 years ago, out of nowhere, I got really, really sick and hospitalized, and I was in big trouble. And for the last 3 years, I have been fighting a chronic version of it. And every time I would get better, they'd put me on, I was in the hospital, they'd put me on these horrible antibiotics that they put you on when you have Ebola. And first time I thought, heard that, I thought they were kidding, and I'm like, yeah, you're great. But then they told me, no, this is really the stuff they put you on, and it was the most horrendous, awful, like, medicine. Like, you thought you were going to die, and you were waiting for death to take you, and it would work for a while, and then the sickness would surge, and then it would work for a while, and the sickness would surge. And so for 3 years, I was sicker than a dog, and then this last February, finally went in to get the surgery done because they said, all right, this is enough. So they actually took out a foot and a half of my intestine. So now instead of a colon, I'm a semicolon.
Oh.
You know? And so, you know, it's... so...
I wasn't ready for that one.
I you know what? It's the first time I said that out loud, I actually was like, did I just say that? Because that wasn't even a pun I meant to make. So it's been rough. And then I get out of the hospital, and I'm like, what in the heavens happened to the world? Because, yeah. You know, this is part of what made me and Sean, you know, we were watching what was happening in the world from our bunker, you know, with toilet paper. And we were both concerned. Like we said, you know what? If of all the times that we've done the show
talking about preparedness or talking about events, this is the time that we honestly probably need to record the most. Not so much to be like, you know, get out there and coronavirus, but because, you know, we have such a nice community and we all, you know, we're taking care of each other. And we thought, well, you know, that now it's our chance to help our do our part and maybe bring out a little morale boost for our listeners.
Yeah, I agree. And when you contacted me, first I had to remember who Jonathan was.
It's true.
It's been so long. But no, you contacted me and you said, you know, we're at such a crazy time right now with this coronavirus. And it's almost like here we are in the bunker. You know, we've always joked for 11 years now. We've been doing this show for 11 years.
It has been.
And we've been always joking about being in the bunker and talking about, you know, through the aftermath. Well, now we're in the bunker. We're socially distancing ourselves in the bunker. And it's just kind of ironic. I mean, of course, I'm not big on, and we're going to talk about this a little bit more, but I'm not big on the doom and gloom side of this whole coronavirus thing, because I think that, you know, I think it'll pass. And I think that that's kind of our main point for doing this show here. But it's just kind of, it's crazy. And it seems so ripe for us, you know, to sit down and bring back the show after 3 years and talk about just what's going on before the world ends, for real.
Yeah, it's true. It's our chance to kind of come to everybody and say, look, you know, it's surreal, though, to be able to talk to people that are even in the UK or in you know, Russia and be like, oh, my God, we're all having these stories that are the same story. How often do you hear this? And it's funny because, I was listening not long ago, listening to the all-cast version, Audible version of World War Z. And it's funny listening to this going, wait a minute, hold up. There's a lot of parallels here. And the one thing that I thought was kind of interesting was even in the World War Z story, those of you who read it or listened to it, there is still, there is an ending. I mean, we break through it and it's, you know, human triumph, everybody working together. But like with Sean, you know, I'm not a doom and gloomer either. I mean, things will pass. I think, you know, it's sad that, you know, we do live in a world that, somewhat, you know, let's be honest, it's a lot of it can be politically motivated depending where you are. And unfortunately, not everybody wants to accept that it's not the end of the world. And, you know, you've got weird fanaticism. It's kind of an interesting, like, experiment in the way society works, watching what kind of broke down. Although I did think this was funny. You remember that game, State of Decay?
Oh, yeah.
So I went back to, you know, I played the second one. I went back to play the first one. And one of the first things that they talk about, I about had a heart attack from laughing. But the first thing that they say in that game is, you know, the one guy, the two friends who are at the campsite, one of them says something like, you know, the one thing I can't believe is that the toilet paper went first. I mean, food, water, I get it. I mean, stealing TVs, I get it. But who in the world said everybody needs to grab the 2-ply toilet paper? And I'm like, wow, they warned us.
They nailed that one.
They
huh?
nailed it.
That's crazy.
But it's been an interesting world out there. But we're here, you know, rather than focus on a lot of the details, because I'm sure you guys have been, like, inundated with them by thousands of different sources, we thought we would focus on what we're doing in it, kind of a sense of community together, and overall a theme of we're going to get through this. Not a matter of if, but when.
Yeah. And as a crazy side note to this, believe it or not, Jonathan and I have not talked since last time we did an episode. I mean, 3 years ago. And we literally jumped on maybe a half hour ago on Skype, and we're talking for the first time. I mean, so this is crazy to me. It's kind of surreal to me because I'm sitting here, you know, it's like it's 2017 again. When we do shows, this is how we've always kind of done them, especially the last few years, is just jump on and just talk about whatever topic. You know, we used to do a lot of heavily researched shows, but now we just get on and talk about, you know, what's going on from our perspectives. And I think that's always worked out well. And that's exactly what we're doing. But this is the first time we've done it in, you know, with a 3-year gap there.
Yeah.
So
we're shooting from the hip on this.
Yeah, exactly. This should be interesting. But
our hips are much older now.
And they don't lie either.
And it's true. It's true. Yeah. When I was like, Sean, is that you? And then he was like, John. And I'm like, John, that's the name they used to call me. You know. But it's funny because even though that much time has passed, and I can't believe it's been like 3 years, it was almost like a wake up call. But it's funny how, and I hope you guys listening are feeling this way. It's funny how it's like riding a bike. You know, you guys are probably listening to us going, oh yeah, you know, like here we are back again, like nothing changed. But you know, in today's day and age, I mean, right now, hey, we could all use a little morale boost, a good laugh, because there doesn't seem to be a lot out there. There seems to be a lot of, like, oh my God, we're going to die. And I'm like, if you're going to die, why is the power still on? Oh God, you're out of toilet paper. You're right. You're going to die. But, you know, in this case, we'll, you know, we're almost calling this the We Swear to God We Didn't Plan This. This isn't our fault edition of the show. Because I kid you not, had at least two people go, well, I hope you're happy. I'm like, whoa, hold up. Just because we were in emergency preparedness didn't mean we wanted this. Yeah. I mean, mine was involving, like, Caps and super mutants. This was not part of the plan. So.
Well, I think it's funny, too, is I've actually, in the last few years, actually, this last year mainly, I've gotten really big into prepping. And when we started the show, you know, 11 years ago, I had no idea. You know, we talked about like Mormon prepping, and we talked about things like that that were kind of basics. And it was interesting to me, but it was something I never did. Well, in the last couple of years, I've gotten away from kind of the fantasy side of my interest in post-apocalyptic, you know, the realm. And I've gotten more into just looking at it seriously. I mean, I'm 44 years old, and I have four kids. And it's like, you know, I look at it and I say, I have to do something. You know, I have to do something to at least prepare. And I'm not talking about building a castle out of shipping containers. I'm talking about, you know, although that would be pretty cool.
I would help you.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Hey, let's do that. But I'm talking about, you know, just kind of basic stuff, especially like emergency preparedness, which, again, we've talked about in the early, early days. So recently, ironically enough, I've gotten really into it. And even from, I guess, from the point where we started this farm, you know, I moved here where we live now 9 years ago, 8 years ago, and we started this farm. And it was kind of as a... just an interest in homesteading, you know, but it's gotten much more than that. We're learning better ways to preserve the food and better ways to store it and you know, things like that. And I've been playing around with alternative powers. I still don't have solar on a large scale. I have a couple small panels that I use to, I charge some lithium batteries mainly for, if I ever needed to charge electronics, you know, like iPad or whatever, but I don't have anything that would run the AC or my refrigerator yet. But you know, that's the dream one day. So anyway, I'm getting more into that, and I think it's funny that now that I've gotten more into that, now this is happening, and a lot of people are stopping and saying, "Wait, you know, what do I need to do?" And of course, they're incorrectly thinking they need to build a fort out of teepee for some reason. and I think that's, you know, I don't have a giant stockpile, but I have enough that's going to last me, you know, a month or so. And I think that in a month from now, the stores are going to be fine. Actually, I think the stores are getting back to stocking the shelves, you know, now. So, I mean, I think things like that aren't, it's kind of a man-made problem when they get to the point where there's no toilet paper because people just went insane. And so
like lemmings, really.
Yeah, exactly. And they hear that they're going to need to stock up on toilet paper, so they go out and buy a bunch of toilet paper. And it's like, wait, you don't actually have to do that for a year's worth of toilet paper. Like, just hold on. You know. So I think that from that standpoint, I've had a lot of practice in this last year, and it's gotten me to be more of a practical prepper, you know, and be more of a, to look at it like, well, let's take a look at what's happening, and let's, you know, we don't really need to stockpile masks because... unless we're the, you know, the sick one has to wear the mask, really, because they have to protect the rest, you know, and things like that. And it's like, it's kind of a shame that now we're to the point where hospitals can't have masks and gloves because people bought them all, you know. And it's like, man, you know, that's the worst case scenario. That's what we don't want to do. But I just think it's kind of interesting timing. I have, I actually have this YouTube channel I have two YouTube channels, and one of them is about cars, and the other one is about camping gadgets. It's called Camp Gadget Reviews, and I'll probably put a link to that in the notes. But so what I do in this is I review gadgets that you use while camping, or like prepping gadgets or things like that. Today, actually, I just made a new video where I had my kids try out freeze-dried macaroni and cheese. And they loved it. They loved it. It's funny. And I never tried it before, so I wanted to make sure, you know, they're the ones that are the mac and cheese experts. You know, they have their favorites and all this stuff. So I'm like, hey, let's try this. So I filmed it, and put it on my channel, and they actually loved it. So I think it was kind of funny. But that's the kind of stuff I like doing.
Yeah.
You know, looking at the practical side of it. And I think that now is a good time to think practically, especially when people are going crazy so much.
You know, that's a good point. And the one thing I've been telling people lately, because I'm similar to, you know, similar to Sean. See, it's funny. I'm actually like, so, you know, I've been working with local church groups and local areas, and I've been doing like keynotes for preparedness. Now, I'm the perfect example of what like to not do, because I'm the guy who basically had all the knowledge and then just never had the resources to do it. And that being said, you know, a lot of what's happened in kind of learning from this, I think that one thing is, you know, obviously we're going to make it through this. I mean, the real tragedy is going to be like, hopefully the economy stays stable, because this is a lot of pieces on the table at once, but we will make it through this. And I just hope that a lot of people will try their best to remember how this felt. Like, yeah, that feeling of I went to the grocery store and this is what it felt like. Like, when this is over and things go back to normal, and people are like, it's not going to go back to normal. Oh, it'll go back to normal. I mean, but hopefully not in the sense that, you know, hopefully there's a humility to it now where remember how you felt, remember how kind of hopeless you felt. Now take that and resolve to never feel that way again. And I think there's a lot of people who, I hate to say it, most of the people probably go right back to the lives they were at if they can. But I hope that a great deal of people are like, and this includes me, because I never had the resources really, because of where I live. The housing market is so high. I might as well be living in Beverly Hills. The housing prices in here in St. George, Utah are insane. But I just, you know, I had to be realistic. But in retrospect, I'm like, this will be the last time you ever hear me say that. And so when things started stockpiling, you know, I moved quick, but the idea was, okay, this is the start of what will now be my future repentance, so to speak, of making sure that doesn't feel that way. And you know, I'm doing okay. I mean, I'm, you know, but it's interesting with, like we were talking about, like even like the Mormon prepper side, it's interesting how, you know, the culture kind of has that integrated. And yet I've seen flip sides of it, and I'm sure this goes for anybody, but you see flip sides. I've seen some incredible outpouring of help, but at the same time, I've seen people who were technically, you know, ready, who are just like losing their minds. And I'm like, wow, this is, honestly, I'm waiting for Vault Tech to be like, I'm kidding, guys, the planet was the vault, you know, because that's what it feels like. Like this was a giant, you know, social experiment. But, you know, it's been a sobering thing. It's interesting to watch. I mean, this is unprecedented. We've never in our, you know, lifetime seen it quite to this level. I mean, you know, SARS, MERS, all those were pretty dangerous. But the one thing that, you know, me and Sean were kind of talking about before we were recording is, you know, the overall thing is, you know, if recessions happen and things collapse, it'll be because I think that people make them collapse. We don't have to have it happen if we stay cool with it. This is going to pass. We're going to find a way through this. But if everybody's going and buying stuff and everybody's freaking out, it's not going to be as pretty. So we do have a way to control this. And, you know, the social distancing, it's working. It takes time, but it will work just by the nature of it. But if everybody skips and goes to Walmart or to spring break, we're all going to die. You know, and it's like, so, but, you know, and I feel bad because I've, even here in St. George, this is spring break Mecca for kids in the West. And we've had so many kids come here like, I don't care. And I'm like, it's not about you, dude. It's about the 12,000 people you passed in the process that you just killed, maybe. And, you know, even though, you know, it's a small percentage, thank God, it's not like 50% of the population. But at the same time, you know, I think this is a wake-up call. I mean, this is pretty sobering stuff. It's not since, what is it, the Spanish flu or even the Black Plague has something been this widespread of this level. And, you know, it's hopefully people learn a lot of lessons from this, if not the least of which is, yeah, it's a small planet. Like, take care of your brother.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's it. You know, and there's both sides of the spectrum. There's the people who don't believe this is a real thing, that it's like, you know, the government making it up to scare, whatever. But then there's the other side of it where people are just going crazy and, like, you know, hoarding toilet paper and things like that. And I completely agree with you, what you've said, where there's, sure, we need to take this seriously. Sure, we need to keep away from each other for the spread of it and be responsible for the good of man, you know, our fellow neighbors. But, like, at the same time, we can't just be crazy about it. We can't lose our minds and lose our cool. We need to just think about responsible ways to do it. You know, and I joke, and there are memes that are going around that are funny to me because they joke about, you know, oh, my lifestyle has been social distancing for the last, you know, few years anyway. So like, this is nothing new to me. And that's exactly me because, you know, I work from home. I homeschool the kids anyway. So, you know, we're here at home anyway. The kids don't go to school. I don't leave the house. My wife does, but she works about 45 minutes away in, you know, Chattanooga, which is like the largest city near us. And that hasn't been like a scary thing, I don't think, because, at this time, I think there are about 8 cases in Chattanooga, so it's not the end of the world. But at the same time, it's like, you know, I know that things are going to be crazy when people first start hearing about it, but I feel pretty safe. I feel like I'm doing my part to keep away from people. You know, my kids, the same thing, with family, everything like that. The only thing that's really scary is my wife has a grandmother who's in a nursing home, and they put her on lockdown immediately 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago. And, you know, I think they did the right thing in making sure, because that's the risk group right there, over 85, 90, you know, years old. So they have that entire place on lockdown, and they make sure that nobody comes in or out, you know. And it's sad for them, but I think it's really necessary. And it's sad for anyone who has to be forced, anyone with a health problem or whatever, that has to be forced into a quarantine. But they have to understand this will pass, and it's for the betterment of everyone.
Yeah.
You know, so I just hope people remember that.
Well, and I do hope that one thing that is kind of spooky to watch, and I, you know, like I said, there's, you know, depending where you live, this story is probably similar, but changes. I mean, there you can tell there is a lot of politics, depending which side of the fence you're on. And in the end, it really doesn't matter because, you know, we're all in the same boat together. But one thing that is interesting when you're seeing like entire states like New York and California, that stuff is kind of scary when you see it going to complete utter lockdown because, you know, I've talked to plenty of people who are like, dude, I don't even know if I'm going to have a job at the end of this because we don't even know when this is going to stop. And that's the one part that is kind of like spooky because, you know, nobody wants to lose their job and that kind of stuff, you know, can be lasting. And so, you know, if you're religious, you know, like, or anyways, you know, it's like, this is a time to, you know, let's pray that it gets over soon. And, you know, before this gets crazy and hopefully the politics can chill out, because I swear to God, the politics is what's going to string this out. But I mean, the sad thing about it is, it's like, you know, I don't know. I've seen some incredibly good behavior, and then you're watching some people where you're like, did I just see that 8-year-old lady with 2 carts of toilet paper? Like, look, lady, I get it, but I think it's time to like lay off the Dulcolax. I mean, like, geez, I have this problem too, but I have half my colon. You got more than I do, you know. But it's. I don't know. It's a sobering thing. I remember the day it all ramped up. I was at the grocery store. Funny enough, I was just getting groceries, but the girl there was just bawling, and she was. I remember the girl working there was just bawling, and she was like, "It's like out of a movie," and it really is. It's so surreal. But the one thing I've learned, and you guys are all, you know, probably not saying anything anybody listening doesn't know. Do yourself a favor. Don't listen to the news. Don't read articles.
Yeah.
Just, you know, stay optimistic, because I don't know why the news is so spun on making it seem like we're going to die, you know, and maybe that's the politics too. But at the same time, you know what? We are so fortunate. The water is still on. The power is still on. And at the end of the day, logistically, we'd have to lose a lot more people for things to start shifting in that regard. And yeah, they're, you know, economic slumps. We don't want that if we can help it. And God, you know, God have mercy. I feel so terrible for people that are like in Italy, or even right now the UK is locking down, but these people in places where the death is so hot, much higher, and it is spooky stuff. But at the same time, you know, all we can do is pray and stay optimistic, and we'll get through it. It'll happen. We just don't have a lot of information, and unfortunately people aren't being, you know, we don't have a lot of information of when this is going to lock down. You know, how long is New York going to stay like this? How long is California? And oh my God, when they locked California, I was like, okay, how do you lock half of, like, you have 45 million people? That's terrifying. And I, you know, that's unfortunate because our state hasn't done that yet, and I think they're trying to do everything they can to avoid it. But it's interesting. I was in the ER on Sunday because I'd had some pains. And I was like, oh, my heavens, please don't let this be like diverticulitis again after the surgery. Well, I go in there and it turned out to be like scar tissue, whatever. Well, I'm in there. There was not anyone in the place. Like there was nobody in line. There was no one. And I was talking to the doctor kind of chuckling. And I said, wait. So how in the world? This place is usually booming. And he laughed. He goes, we get a lot of people who come in here with every little thing. He goes, when this started, everybody who coughed came in. And he goes, but even on normal days, we had people coming in for every little I hurt thing. And he goes, the minute they thought they could get sick here, they all stopped coming in. And he goes, it's kind of ironic because now we can do our job. And so there wasn't even one person in there. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me, man. That's kind of, it just goes to show human psychology, you know. But yeah, it's been interesting.
What's funny is I was actually right now I was supposed to be in Indiana visiting my family. I had this trip planned. I was going to take the kids up there. We're going to visit my parents and my sister and everything. And you know, we planned this for a couple months. And last week, I had to call them and say, look, I don't think it's a good idea if I travel. You know, I mean, up until then, I was still, even when the coronavirus thing started, I was like, yeah, it's not, no problem. It's not going to be a big deal. But like up until last week when they started locking down these states, I'm like, you know what? I don't want to be stuck up there. Like if I travel 8 hours and then they lock down a state, like what am I going to do? You know? Mm-hmm. So I called it off. I called my parents. And I said, you know, I'm sorry, we're going to have to do this another time. And, you know, they understood. But, the thing that I think really scared me, though, beyond the lockdowns, is today and yesterday maybe when they started sending out those letters saying that you have an essential job, like, you know what I mean, like healthcare workers and infrastructure type of jobs. They said you're essential, so you're free to travel. But anyone else who's not essential will get in trouble for traveling on the roads. Mm-hmm. You know, and they get these letters, these essential letters, and everyone's like kind of, you know, oh, I got the essential letter, I'm cool. But at the same time, it's scary. And another thing I think that scared me was I was reading about police departments are they're actually letting people go with nonviolent offenses. They're letting them go because they don't have room and they also don't want a coronavirus situation in a jail. I mean, it would just kill everyone. And so they're trying to get rid of the nonviolent, and they're also not arresting nonviolent offenders. So people are pretty much like, oh, I can go steal a car, I can do whatever I want. The police literally said, we're not going to arrest you. And I don't know if it's going to be quite like that, but it seems like that would be a scary situation. So
yeah, I've been fortunate because where I'm at, you know, the governor we have, he seems to be, you know, he was quick on the, you know, we do need a social distance. But the one thing that was kind of cool here, and I count my blessings because I'm, you know, I'm right on the border to Vegas. Vegas, and I have friends who live there, they got shut down hard. And it was a little bit political. They had actually, that is the largest incoming city for out-of-town travel. And people in large groups, those casino businesses, their world. So they actually had a string of casinos owned by the same place that were like, we're not going to shut down until you force us. Well, you look on, you want to see something that creep you out, you know, watch a picture of the strip with no lights on. That hasn't happened since Frank Sinatra died. That place is on hardcore lock. Like people, I got friends down there that are just like, oh my God, I don't know what's going to happen. Like business just stopped overnight. And, you know, hopefully, you know, the nightmare won't last long. And that's the only thing that does freak me out is, you know, there isn't a lot of communication about it. I mean, I know we're flattening curves and that kind of thing, but, you know, I've got people at work asking me like, well, so hold up. What if we do this for like the next 2 weeks, what's going to change? I'm like, yeah, you're onto something that's interesting, which is, you know, where's that balance? At what point do we hide until our economy collapses? And, you know, and everybody's in different situations and you've got a lot of, you know, one side or the other thinking that you got to balance out and it's going to be a challenge. I mean,
yeah,
you know, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah. The economy half of it does scare me the most. I was telling my wife this the other day, I think, you know, the virus part of it, I'm not really scared of, you know, I'm a healthy 44 year old and I think that I'd probably be all right. I think, you know, my kids, my youngest is 7. So I think that in that regard, it's not a high risk. We're not a high risk group. But the thing that scares me is the economy. You know, this is just unprecedented. We had such a strong economy before this, you know what I mean? And, and we had like the stock market, I have stocks that, I don't even want to talk about how much I've lost. And this, you know, the stock market was doing so great. Everything was so great. You know, unemployment was doing great, everything. And this just killed it. It just, I mean, it's amazing to me that people who are losing their jobs in, I don't know, like, you know, at the fast food place or any kind of, you know, lawn mowing, kind of non-essential, they call them, jobs, they're actually, the people who are being laid off are being hired by the supermarkets to stock shelves. Mm-hmm. And I think that's fascinating. But at the same time, what are we going to do in this, when we get out of this? Like, are they going to get their jobs back? Are we gonna, you know, because the supermarket's not going to need 100 people stocking shelves anymore, you know, when we're done. And so, I mean, it's just, it's crazy how things have changed so quickly, and we're taking it one day at a time, literally taking it one day at a time, because we don't know what's coming tomorrow. You know, we don't know. We've never been through this before. And it, now, again, here I am doom and glooming after we just said, you know, we're going to try to keep this upbeat. But that's just the truth of it. You know, this is my side of it. And I think even though I'm here on a farm and I feel really secure with my situation and I'm not really scared of anything in regards to this happening, you know, to me or my family, it's possible. Anything is possible. And it's, so when you look at that side of it, it can be scary, but I'm like you. I think this will pass over. It'll take some time. It'll probably, some people are saying 18 months. I think maybe by the end of the year, you know, we'll
yeah, I think, hopefully get I think, back. Well, I don't think it'll take as long as people say. I think that people are doom and glooming, because the one thing I've, you and you guys already are probably ahead of me on this. I mean, really what it comes down to is there's always like so-and-so who's an expert. You know what? Don't listen to anything that the CDC themselves isn't saying. And if it's, or the World Health Organization, it's everybody's paraphrasing. Everybody's got an expert who says, oh no, it's going to be a year and a half. We don't know. And really what it comes down to is there's a lot of factors that they don't take into account, which is, you know, and again, if you're religious, I like to throw this out there, that if you're religious, there's the miracle factor that you can't always predict, which is, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I have somebody at work that's like, oh my God, 500,000 people are going to be dead in U.S. alone. And I'm like, you know what though? Think about this, okay? The world, even if you want to go nature or religious, either way, like the world has a way of equaling itself out in a way. And whether it's the Black Plague, it did not wipe out all of humanity. The Spanish flu in 1912, they killed what, like 10, 15 million Americans? It didn't kill all of them. Something always happened, and you know, whether it was a warmer weather or the fact that, you know, like SARS or MERS, there was always a factor to stopping it. And yeah, it's easy to go, well, they locked it down. Well, there's so much that could have happened, and usually fate has a way of intervening in a way, and whether it's divine intervention or just nature balancing, you know, it's, although I'm waiting for somebody who is like an eco person to tell me that it's the trees fighting back. I'm like, I swear to God, if you say this is the happening, I'm gonna freaking lose my mind. But the thing is, at the end of the day, we're, you know, there's a lot of things that could happen that we can't predict, which is, you know, maybe the warm weather does help it. Maybe there is something that pops out on the side. I mean, we're hearing, it's funny that you hear about possible cures, but the news doesn't seem to like to focus on that too much. And, you know, and every country is dealing with this in different ways. But you know what? And I guess part of the reason me and Sean are touching on this, like you said, we're not trying to doom and gloom here. What we are saying is, hey, we're feeling it too. This is our hobby, and it probably is yours too. But if you're having moments where you're going, oh my God, you're not alone. It's okay. Like anxiety, people are feeling it. That's the one part I do worry about is, you know, depression is a hefty thing to have to deal with. And I don't, you know, you wonder how much more the world can contain a lockdown before they themselves start to have trouble with it. I mean, you know, will suicide start to skyrocket now, and being under lockdown and isolation, it's a scary thing to do. And at what point does the balance start to tip a different direction, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, but the clouds have got to break somewhere. I mean, let's be honest. Everybody started to freak out and come apart when the NBA started canceling. As soon as we didn't have games to watch, everybody, but you know, what's sad is everybody gets sent home in isolation. What do? They turn on the TV and start watching the news. God, no wonder we're all having trouble. I watched Picard, so I'm like moderately depressed. No, tomorrow's the season finale. Day after tomorrow's season finale, I'm like, oh God, no, please. But you know, one thing I will say though, and I got to hand it to you know, people can say whatever they want about people with imaginations or gamers and all. Boy, the gaming community, they sure seem to be doing a pretty good job holding it together and joining together in a community. My son, who is now, this is going to blow your mind. So my daughter is 16 and my son's now 14. These are the little kids, you know. This is freaking me out. So, but my son, I'm like, you know, Ari, I hope you guys are okay. You're not feeling anxiety. My son's like, no, he doesn't care. As far as he's concerned, like, school's done for the year. Woohoo. And my daughter was distraught because they canceled school, to which I had to explain to her that she was probably the only child in the entire United States probably concerned about that right now. Like, you want to go back? Like, dude, what is wrong with you? I didn't raise you this way. But it's, you know, do your best to focus on, you know, happy stuff. I, for the first time in my life, you know, I've been very fortunate to have the same job for 20 years. I don't know very many people who can say that. I'm actually, for the first time in my life, wondering if this is going to shake up, and I don't know what I'd do if I did that, if that happened. So, but, you know, in the meantime, you know, hey, you know what? I can't really change that. Let's see where this goes, but I'm, you know, let's pray for a miracle. And in the meantime, you know, hey, if they can fix Fallout 76, anything is possible. Let's be honest. So, you know.
Yeah, and speaking of gaming, you know, I heard that the first day they started the quarantines and everything, like, Steam had a record number of users, and Xbox Live actually went down because it was so stressed from the servers were so stressed.
It's true.
I think that's funny.
Yeah, it's interesting. The gaming community, it really did a good job coming together. I think online games, you know what? That's very healthy. I mean, you know, last night, this will crack you up. Last night, I actually had this moment of like, oh God, I can't, you know, how am I going to do this? You know, and it's funny because my wife looks over and I've got my, you know, my VR, my Vive on my headset, and she just sees me with my head back in my chair. And you know, and anybody who's anybody would have been like, are you watching porn? And, you know, and I'm not. But but what happened was there's a sim on Steam. They have this somebody, and the guy's a freaking genius. He recreated Deckard's apartment from Blade Runner, complete with the Vangelis soundtrack and everything. And I was sitting on the balcony with the rain on the 90th floor or whatever, overlooking with the Vangelis soundtrack. And I just stood there in VR, staring off into this rain. And you know, life sucks when Deckard's future is like, I wish I could live here. I'm like, that is the first time in my entire life I've ever looked down at an Atari sign from like 2019 and been like, I wish I could live there. But it's, you know, hey, whatever works. I mean, you know, if it's a show you want to watch, I mean, stay upbeat. There's so much positivity out there, and we'll make it through. It's going to happen. Yeah. I'm a little spooked. I'm in a higher bracket too, because post-surgery less than three weeks ago, they're actually like, oh, by the way, like, I wish you'd have told me that before I had done this, but, you know, how would you know? But that being said, you know, we just know to everybody out there, you know, we're all in this together. Me and Sean are in this with you, and, you know, we're if you guys ever need anything from us, you know, don't hesitate. And, you know, for what it's worth, if just listening to this episode is helping, you know, we'll, why not? Let, you know, we'll continue to pop them out here and there as we go through this together, and kind of just keep tabs on everybody and make sure everybody's doing okay.
Yeah, but you guys can't have my toilet paper.
That's true. His toilet paper is funny because, like, you know, I actually pictured this the other day that I was like, what if Sean is like really like, leave the paper, walk away. You know, like, because you said you were working on cars, and the first thing I'm like, of course you are. The V8 Interceptor. I see where this is going, you know. But no, it's, you know, what's funny. And me and Sean were touching on this a little bit too there, man, there's been a lot of stuff like gaming wise. I wonder how many people out there were like, Fallout 76, John, hello, anything. And, you know, maybe this is a good quick time to kind of touch on, you know, if anybody wanted to know what my take on Fallout 76 is, maybe this is a good time.
Yeah, let's switch gears to that.
Yeah, let's switch gears. So, and it's funny cause somebody out there is like, I thought we weren't supposed to be depressed. So here's the quick of it. I will tell you this. So the big question, John, what did you think of Fallout 76? Hey, I will tell you right now, I was with a lot of you at the beginning going, really, guys? These bugs are in the game? Really? What is wrong? You know, and I will also say, and I'm not going to throw this out there because I know everybody has an opinion. The game, I don't think the game nearly deserved the hate level it got. I think the world was just in a pissy mode. I think Baby Yoda may have helped. But, you know, I think that the world was just kind of like in anger mode. That was a year that people seemed to be like, I hate everything. Like, hate videos and angry people seemed to be the top videos at the time. And a little bit, you know, Bethesda made some foobars. It was stuff that could have been avoided and they should have been tested better. I don't think that people expected an emptier world versus a city destroyed. But I will tell you this, that game, I played it with my son and together, and he and I, that game, so the time I was sick and I was on antibiotics, the antibiotics like were so miserable that I actually, for the first time in my life, started to feel I actually started to have chronic depression too. And I started to get really creepy in my head. Thinking things I never thought I'd think, just because I was so miserable and hurting so bad, and I was so tired of it, I just didn't want to do it anymore. And that game actually gave me the outlet that I needed to keep me just sane enough to get me through it. I will tell you, though, that so the game over the last couple of years has grown leaps and bounds. It's had a lot of stuff fixed. I know it's still, you know, what's funny is actually it seems like people kind of backed off a little bit, but this Wastelanders expansion coming out in April, this was definitely a punch in the arm I think that it needed. I think it's going to open up a lot of a second chance for a lot of people. Do yourself a favor. I know, like, there's a lot of people out there that are pissed at the producers or whatever for not communicating or bugs that happened. But you know what? It's the same guys who make the other games Bethesda does. There's some very, very talented people who are just doing their job and doing the best they can do. And it's actually pretty amazing stuff. Even though it's a different style world, give it a chance. There's some pretty... The map is huge, and there's some really amazing stuff under the hood. The one mistake I think that they really did make was that it was kind of hard to know what you were doing. It was kind of hard to know how to link up to people or talk to people. It wasn't, you know, there wasn't a lot of tutorial type stuff, but the one thing that they did do odd was, you probably heard this, was there are no NPCs. And what they were trying to do was, and you learn this as you go through the overarching story that takes you throughout the map and through the different factions, that they were trying to make a story that talked about a world that before the war was so dependent on wanting to automate, that the irony was after the war took place, those automations were the only things that remained. And so it was kind of like an interesting, like, twist, you know? However, you're still dealing with the Fallout community, and you got to have a better story. And you can't just tell the story from the point of view of robots and people who are dead on tapes. You've got to have stuff happening. And a lot of it was kind of sloppy. And so over the last couple of years, they've really done a good job with that. I think that Fallout, you know, the Wastelanders will bring a lot more to it. I'm having a great time, and I think that's really what it comes down to, is are you having fun with it? But the one thing I will say, to clarify, I know that game got a lot of hate because there was that momentary relapse where they came out with the subscription, and it's funny, I had people at work who don't even play Fallout who are like, who does Bethesda think they are charging a subscription now? And I was like, Bethesda, dude, who's communicating here? Because in the end, what it was they were just trying to give value to people who wanted a private server, because it wasn't a server you can just run on your computer. It's like a server farm. It's got to spin up. But they were actually giving, you know, hey, here's a private server for you. And I think that whoever is in charge of their PR just didn't do a very good job of explaining the how and why of it. And, you know, in the end, I think people kind of like chilled back out when they realized, well, we're not trying to like only give handouts to the players who pay. I think we're just trying to give value to those who are paying so they can have that little extra if they so choose. But it's still a free-to-play. You know, give it a chance if you haven't, and if you had and it's been a while, give it a chance again. I don't tend to play with people. There's only usually about 20 people per server anyway, which is fine, but I jump in on a private server with my kids and me, and we derp around, and there's some pretty cool, amazing stuff. I mean, they definitely get points for the stuff that they did pop in. It just takes a little bit to kind of get to the meat and potatoes of where the really good stuff is, because it is, it's an open wilderness. But there's stuff in there that's pretty amazing. And for an online game, they actually, you know, I never got bored. I took a break from it for a while because there were some bugs at the beginning that were hilarious. But one thing that is funny is right now the Fallout, I don't know if you caught this, the Fallout 76 community in the game, they've been hoarding toilet paper, and in the player vending machines, jacking the prices up to 25,000 caps. So leave it to Fallout players to make hilarity out of a bad situation. So. But
that's hilarious.
But yeah, I've been having fun. We never really got a chance to touch on it. And I know you had actually taken a break from games.
Yeah, I have not played Fallout 76 at all, which might surprise a lot of people. I think when it came out, it was kind of a weird time for me, and I was not into gaming at all at that point. And I just said, you know what? This is the first Fallout game I did not buy on launch. I mean, since Fallout 1, you know, I mean, because I was a huge Wasteland fan. I mean, you were too. And when Fallout 1 came out, you know, I bought it on day one and every single one of them. And then this one, I'm like, meh. And I think a lot of That's it was okay. the online part of it.
Yeah.
I think it was just, and it's ironic, you know, I used to be the editor-in-chief at Massively, but I think maybe that was a lot of it. It burned me out on online interactions. And
yeah.
And I think when it came to that, I was like, I'm not really in that point of my life where I want to sit down and spend that much time, you know, working through what I feel. I know it wasn't an MMO, but I know it was like kind of a cooperative online play. And I was just like, I don't really want to get into that, even though it's a Fallout game. And then I heard all the reviews and I kind of reinforced my original thoughts and I just completely was not interested. But it's good to hear that they've ironed a lot of that out and that
yeah.
it's better.
You know what? I'll never say that it didn't deserve the negativity at the beginning. I think that the sad thing was, I think that when you have a company like Bethesda who did so many good things, it's very easy for the world to get, you know, you go onto YouTube and you'll find 1,000 different people trying to explain to people why Bethesda never understood gaming. And it's like, guys, you do understand that the reason we have open world games like, you know, Breath of the Wild or because of, you know, or Witcher is because of games like Morrowind. You know, it's like yes. these guys created the open world. You know, like we all love Skyrim. We all love Morrowind. Dude, it's these same guys. They tried something new and it was a mess. And they've now the nice thing is that they, you know, They had a recent interview with Pete Hines. For the first time, we finally got to hear from Pete Hines' point of view. And he said, you know what? We planned for if it was like that. We aren't going to like shut it down or anything. I think the biggest flaw that they had was nobody really understood what the game was. It's not a hardcore MMO like Elder Scrolls Online where you have tons of people and tons of quests. It's actually more in the middle. It's almost more of like a casual game, but because there's not really, but a lot of it you kind of have to create the what do you want to do today kind of stuff, and it was a little bit more of a sandbox, and I think that turned a lot of MMO people off. But then on top of that, it kind of played a little differently, and my dog I think is barking at my review. in the end, it was like I think that the other half of the crew who were Fallout fanatics were like, what is this? Because it felt a little bit different because it wasn't your typical. An online game is hard to tell a story.
Yeah.
And you have to delve into it a little bit before you get to where the Fallout stuff really starts to shine again. And then the people are like, yeah, well, then there's the Atomic Shop and things you buy. Don't worry about that. If you don't like it, don't buy it, you know. But there's when you get, you know, once you kind of get into it and kind of test the water of what's there and what you can do, events, you know, the camps. See, I love the camp building. I love any game where you can do that. It's a lot of fun. And there is a Fallout feeling to it. Once you kind of get into it, and I think Wastelanders is going to bring that home tenfold. Like, I think that's really going to open up a lot of where it had some problems, but that's okay. I think if anything, you know, hopefully this virus kind of got the hate out of the world. Because, man, for a while there, it seemed like no game could get positive reviews on Steam. Like, everything was hate, hate, hate. And maybe, you know, I saw Doom Eternal goes live and I'm like, here comes the Bethesda hate. Oh, it was people loved it. Okay, good. Maybe we're getting out of our system a little bit. So, you know, it's a small world, you know?
Yeah, that's very true. And maybe this expansion, this will be the time for me to jump in.
Yeah.
I'm hoping, but
yeah.
Yeah. And you know, we were talking about this before where I had a kind of a long break from gaming. And I think we even joked about this on the last time we recorded. So that was over 3 years ago that Jonathan and I have kind of switched roles where, you know, he's more into the games, especially like online games than I am. But I've been getting back into it a little bit. Like we were talking about how I was playing Worm Online so much and it's not post-apocalyptic, but it's very, you know, grassroots kind of, you know, starting from scratch, which I love. So that's always, that's just my go-to game now. Here it is. I don't know when that game was made. 2007, I think, somewhere around there.
Yeah,
2008.
Yeah. It's a great game.
So I've been loving that. And I actually ordered a game today. Well, yesterday. The first time I've pre-ordered a game in probably 10 years. Again, it has nothing to do with any of our topic, but it's called SnowRunner. I don't know if you heard of it.
I've heard of it.
It's kind of a not a sequel, but a kind of a sequel to Mud Runner. It's basically an off-road game.
The one where you were Yeah, like the one where you, because didn't, what was it, Mud Runner that just came out? Oh no, maybe it was Spin Tires. The one that had like the Chernobyl.
Yeah, yeah, DLC. I think that was Spin Tires. Yeah,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's the kind of gaming I do now. It's like, you know, just kind of relaxing, off-roading in my truck, kind of, you know, no zombies are going to come out and attack me, you know. I'm getting old, you know.
Totally understand. American Truck Simulator, if somebody had told me a million years ago that I was going to play that game, and it was VR that got me into it, you know, that game is immensely popular, and I'm like, a truck simulator, what? Dude, it's like ASMR for gamers. I mean, it's like you play it and there's something lethargic, and that's okay. There's no pressure. There's no insanity, other than, you know, playing in Europe and I'm driving on the wrong side of the road and killing people. But that's, you know, different. You know that. But yeah, it's you know, I, like you said, we must be getting old.
Right now, I have 3 Xbox One games. I have Fallout 4, which is I'll never get rid of. I have Mad Max, which I haven't beat yet.
That's a great game.
I want to. Yeah, I got to beat that game. And then I have GTA 5. And GTA 5 is, I mean, those are my three all-time favorite games. I sold all the other ones. I traded them in, you know, for Wii games for the kids and stuff like that. And those 3 games are just my top 3. And I just play them constantly. Like, I'll just jump in, and I think we've talked about this before, GTA 5, jumping on the train.
Oh, it's so much
fun. Yeah, just riding the train, just blowing everyone away.
I'm doing that in Red Dead Redemption right now, and it's just as fun.
Yeah, see, I don't have Red Dead 2. I have 1 on for Xbox 360.
2 is so gorgeous.
I want to get 2 so bad.
Yeah, that's having probably a riot. Did you know, and I didn't catch, like, if you caught this, did you know that they re-released Wasteland?
Yeah, on Steam.
On Steam, I'm loving it. And it's funny because they didn't change the game. They just changed the look and the graphics to more of a 3D look, and then kind of filled in the gaps where maybe there were some story places that were harder to portray because it was such a limited, you know, space on the game. But they didn't change the overall feel to it, and it's a riot.
I've heard good things about it. My best friend, who has been my best friend since we were 3 years old, is he and I played Wasteland when we were kids, and he actually messaged me the other day, and he was like, dude, have you checked out the new Wasteland on... And at first I was like, well, Wasteland 3? You know, I thought he was talking about that. And he said, no, the original on Steam. And so I looked at it, and I didn't get it because I was like, well, I already have it, you know, the original, and I don't know if I want to get it again on Steam. But he did explain it was a little bit different, and so I might still check it out.
Graphically, it's much easier to portray. Like, they're trying to portray things in a way that's not so pixelated. So when you actually see monsters, you're seeing them in more of a Wasteland 2 kind of look. Mm. But what's amazing is it's the same exact map with the same. So if you lined up the tiles with the new one, they'd still line up. So like the train cars and the are still in the same spots with the same amount of tiles, but now they're a 3D model in that space. And so, and then when you, they've got little things that kind of fill in the gaps a tad, like, you know, if you have to reference the handbook or things that they would have said, go look up, you know, paragraph 3 on page 4, it's all built right in. And so it's worth it. I will say, going back and playing it, oh my God, I forgot how hard that game was. it's tricky. I mean, new people who've never played it, they might get frustrated because it's a lot, it's not as user-friendly. It's like going and playing Morrowind. So if somebody plays Skyrim, like, wait, it doesn't even show me where to go. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's pretty hardcore. But man, Wasteland 3, though, holy moly, it looks good.
Yeah, it does.
I'm dying. I want to play that. So, and Rage 2 is a masterpiece.
Oh, yeah.
I loved Rage 2. It was great.
I have not played it, but that looks really good.
Yeah, that's and it's been on sale quite a bit. I actually really enjoyed it. I love Mad Max. That's why I was big on that. And my dog agrees. So. But, you know, one thing I was thinking, too, we ought to, like, you know, as we go, you know, maybe in the next, you know, week or two, you know, maybe we could, you know, record yet another show as we kind of quarantine together, everyone, you know. And, you know, one of the things I was going to check if you saw, did you watch Chernobyl?
Yes, I absolutely loved it.
That has to be our next topic.
Oh,
because, oh, my holy heaven, that is not only a masterpiece of a story, but I'm like, dude, I thought I'd seen directors with ideas that were genius, but this director and this writer, oh my God. And now to find out that Craig Mazin, who wrote it, is writing The Last of Us for HBO.
Oh, nice.
They're doing this miniseries of The Last of Us, including like the same writers coming back to help do it, and then the guy who did the music, The Last of Us, is coming to do it. And because it's HBO, it'll be the real Last of Us. But no, that I think, you know, we could go on for like an hour and a half about that because there's so much that's was so amazing.
That's a good point. That's a good point. That show, I kind of caught it. I think I wasn't it was on a couple episodes. It was on like episode 2 when I caught it, or whenever. Yeah, I don't know when they released how many they released it when they first came out. But I started watching, I think, the first 3 episodes. And I was completely hooked. And I was like, this... And I was almost about to cry watching that show.
Absolutely.
Because I remember that time. I remember being a kid, a 10-year-old kid, and hearing... I still picture when my mom was telling me about what happened. And I look up in the sky, and I see this cloud. And I thought, is that the radiation? Like, is that coming?
Yeah.
But she's like, no.
That's just a cloud.
Yeah. And I remember being so scared as a kid.
That was
about
creepy.
What's going to happen to us. And to see their side of it, you know, because we never really learned it because, you know, Russia hid a lot of that. Mm-hmm. To learn their side and exactly what was happening during that time, it was just heartbreaking, you know. But that, it was written so beautifully, acted beautifully,
it was
everything.
It was like the perfect, you know, and we'll get it more of this in the episode talk about. But like, oh my gosh, what an amazing way that no one ever thought of to tell a story from points of view that constantly shift constantly to the person who's experiencing whatever it is for the first time. And then on top of that, we know Chernobyl well. I've played every Stalker game 1,000 times over. I could tell my kids what happened with that reactor. But in my entire life, I have never seen a more easy to understand, fleshed out for everyone exactly what happened that day in a way that was like, oh my God, my kids understood what happened. And that, you know, and what an amazing way to tell a story. And I think every Emmy that show won, it deserved every bit of it, right down to the music making things have a feel, you know what I mean? And, I think that'd be a perfect, next episode. And maybe like in the next, you know, week or two, you know, me and Sean will, you know, talk off camera, you know, but I think, you know, as we, you know, like I
Wait,
said,
there
we're
are
all
cameras.
Yeah. It's like, oh, you didn't see that. Oh, oh yeah. So yeah, I mean, that's it, you know, like I said, as we go through this isolation together, you know, we what a better time to record a podcast or two and, you know, kind of remind you guys like, hey, we're still out there. We can still chuckle and laugh and talk about, although I'll tell you what, it's like, if I have one more person that's like, I'm still waiting for the Vault-Tec guy to knock on my door. I'm like, stop it. You're scaring me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, depends what vault we're in. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, we're, you know, when we stay alive out there, man, we, who thought it would ever really come down to quite this level? This is definitely, I think, a surprise for everyone involved.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it's, there's a lot of things, I guess a lot that's happened in the last 3 years that have been crazy, but here we are, you know, we're sitting here talking about this again, and it's so funny because, like you said, we've always said stay alive out there, but it's kind of almost, you know, scary now, and I think of our experiences the last 3 years, you know, your experiences in the hospital, I don't want to make like compare these at all because it's not the same. But I've been doing a lot of traveling, and I actually went to Wasteland Weekend twice since the last time we recorded.
Oh, wow!
And it's such an eye opener. It's such a crazy experience. Actually, let me talk about that for a second.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because I think a lot of people talk about going to an event like a post-apocalyptic event, and they say, oh, it's great to see your friends. It's great to get together. You know, maybe you might build a car that looks kind of Mad Max, and you might get, you know, especially wear your costumes. You know, before that, I was doing like the parade at Dragon Con, where I dressed up. We did a Fury Road parade, you know, and I was dressed up like a rock rider, and like we did all this stuff, and that was fun. But Wasteland Weekend is amazing. It's an amazing experience that you can't really get anywhere else except in the middle of the Mojave Desert.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I think people have tried to replicate it. I've tried to replicate it. I started an event locally here called Aftermath in 2017, And I did it the first year, and then I kind of handed it off to someone else, because the guy who owns the property, because I said, this isn't really for me. I'm not an event coordinator. So here, you know, go nuts. So
yeah.
That's not my thing anymore. But it's a fun event, and it's great because it's local. But there's forest around you. You know, there's raining, and there's wet, and there's mud, and stuff like that. But when you go out in the Mojave Desert, you know, you're feeling it. You're feeling like you're there in Mad Max and, you know, Fury Road, and you feel like, I don't know how to explain it, but for me, you know, I'm a big car guy, and there are so many amazingly talented people there with, I mean, there's 100 cars there easily. And when we have the car parade, we have a car show there and all that stuff. And you sit there among all these cars and you just say, there is nothing in the world like this. You know, this is incredible to be here in the desert with this level of creativity. It's amazing. And the costumes too. I've gotten kind of out of costuming. I was big into it, you know, 10 years ago and 5 years ago. I made a couple costumes for Wasteland Weekend, and I really enjoyed it. But when you see the difference between, like, the first year when Wasteland Weekend started, actually, they started 11 years ago also, same time we started the podcast. I don't know, is that a coincidence? Or but they started 11 years ago, and they, the first, when you look at those costumes from those people the first year, you know, they're wearing BDUs, and they're wearing just military, clean, you know, they throw on a gun, and that's kind of their thing. Well, now it's to the point where it's out of control. It's the people are making costumes that are better than any movie you've ever seen, you know. And there are actually people there from Hollywood making Hollywood-level costumes just to wear for 5 days in the desert, you know. And it's amazing. I can't even really explain it. But then you have a city that's built in the middle of nowhere, and it's built several weeks before, and then several weeks after the event, they actually tear it all down. And it's amazing to me, because they weld these frames up, they build these giant structures, and to walk around there, especially at night when everything is lit up with, you know, there's no grid there, so everything is run by generators.
It's like barter town.
Yeah, exactly, and everything is run and put together in a truly, you know, a truly kind of post-apocalyptic wasteland feel to it. And you see neon lights there. You see, you know, the signs. Like, there's this one of these tribes, the clan called Dukes of the Nuke, and they have a sign that says Dukes, and it's written with different mismatched letters from signs.
Yeah, like, so some of hand-picked it from other things.
Yeah. So some of them have, like, light bulbs in them. Some of them have neon, things like that. And you just look at that, and you're like, I am in a movie right now, you know? Mm-hmm. So basically, it's been an amazing experience for me. I went in 2017, then I went again last year in 2019. I don't think I'll go back, just because I feel like I've done it. And I can't explain how expensive it is. Mm-hmm. It's going there. Well, for me, I can't just fly there. I can't just fly in and be like, I'm going to experience this. I have to bring my car.
Yeah.
So last year I brought I have a car I built, and then I have a go-kart that I built also. And I had to put them on a trailer. We had to rent a truck and drive out there. I mean, I'm talking multiple thousands of dollars to get out there. And it was, God bless my wife for being so, for letting me do this. Cause it was a huge thing. And it was something that, you know, I knew was kind of going to be kind of a bucket list thing. Actually, in 2017, I thought it was going to be a bucket list thing. So then I didn't go in 2018, but then 2019, I got the opportunity. I had the resources to be able to do it again. And I said, you know, I asked my wife, I said, how do you feel about me doing this again? And she's like, oh God, but you know, she let me do it. And I planned it out, and it was just amazing. I mean, driving across the country is also half the fun. Mm-hmm. I go out there with the other people in my tribe, and we just drive out there together. There's this thing they call the Great 40 Migration, which is through I-40, you know, straight through from Nashville all the way to California City. Yeah, well, actually, it goes to Barstow, and then we go side roads to California City. But you take I-40 that whole way, and so we kind of make it like an in-theme thing where we dress in our kind of casual wasteland clothes where we don't wear normal clothes. Even, you know, so when we go in gas stations, people are like, who are these guys? You know, we have all our wasteland vehicles and we're just all, we're not dressed completely up, you know, in like armor and stuff, but just kind of, you know, torn up rag clothes and stuff like that. And it's fun. It's a lot of fun. So that really added a lot to the experience. And on the drive back, actually, we had to be back in time. A friend of mine is a teacher, and he had to be back in time on Monday to go back to school. So Saturday and Sunday, we drove 32 hours straight. Like, we didn't stop from California to Nashville. I don't remember a lot of it. You know? I'll just say that much. It was just, we switched off. Like, one person was asleep in the passenger seat, and the other person would drive. And I mean, a 20-year-old, if I was 20, that would have been no problem. But man, at my age, it was, it was the wasteland
I've
in my mind.
I've done that before. It's a tough one.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. But I had so much fun. And another thing, actually, not to completely switch gears here, but we're getting kind of long in this episode. So I wanted to touch on one other thing that I've been doing in the last couple of years. And that is, I started writing again. I haven't written in a long time, and I started writing for a site called postapocalypticmedia.com.
No kidding.
And it's not my site. Someone else owns it. I figured, you know, I keep starting things and then saying, and then like giving up on them. So I said, I'm going to join somebody else this time. I'll, you know, so I haven't been writing a lot. I've been writing maybe every couple months, but I did a couple articles in there. It's a great, great site. They've been doing it for many years. It's really casual. You know, they don't have a post that come up every day or anything like that. It's just kind of, they have a couple contributors. And so I wrote a couple articles. I wrote one on how to build your wasteland vehicle and kind of some tips on how, if you are thinking about building one, you know, kind of what to do. And then I wrote, I've written probably 10 of them so far, I guess. But another one I liked was when Disney Plus came out, I wrote one on the top post-apocalyptic movies on Disney Plus. Now, can you think of any offhand that you would think of as a Disney movie that would be post-apocalyptic?
Oh, okay. Let me think here. Okay, so this would be post-apocalyptic. And you know what's funny? Shame on me. Like, I haven't watched a lot of Disney Plus other than, you know, Mandalorian, which was a must watch.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, heavens. What would it be?
I just want to see if you pick my number one, because it's pretty obvious, but you might not think about it right away. But
yeah, and it's funny you mention that, because I ended up watching, and you've probably seen this too, that video that it goes to explain how all the Pixar movies take place in different timelines, and like from Wall-E to Bug's Life being after people. And I'm guessing Wall-E?
Yes, Wall-E.
Yeah.
Now, what's funny is when I researched this, I was looking through the entire catalog, and I saw a bunch. They even have like a teen sitcom called Zombies. And I was like, well, maybe I can throw this in there, but it's not. It's Glee. It's basically Glee with zombie makeup, you know? So I didn't include that on the list, but yeah, Wall-E is number one. And then there are some episodes, there's a couple Marvel, movies that are post-apocalyptic.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I added those in there, but I only made it a top three, and it was the two Marvel movies, the post-apocalyptic ones, and then there was Wall-E. So then I wrote another article that I thought was interesting. When I was researching this, I found out that there are people who believe that Aladdin was a post-apocalyptic movie. Have you heard this?
Yeah, I have. Like, it took place like much, much, much later, and like the magic is sort of like resulted from that.
Yeah, yeah. So I found this so interesting. So then I went ahead and I wrote this other article just dedicated to that whole theory. And I was down the rabbit hole with that one. You know, I kept reading all these crazy theories on like all these different things.
I love that stuff.
You know, yeah, me too. And it was like, I don't know, like Iago said something, the parrot said something, and it was like, oh, well, that's post-apocalyptic. You know, just because like one word he said, or when the genie comes out, he says 10,000 years can, you know, give you such a crick in the neck. Well, they're like, well, if he remembers modern stuff, like he's doing imitations of, you know, Rodney Dangerfield and stuff like that, well, then that's when it must have started. So 10,000 years after that. And it's like, well, that's quite a stretch. You know, it's just it's a cartoon. So at the end of the article, I found out that someone actually asked the writers, you know, is this a post-apocalyptic movie? And they were like, no. They're like, no, that's ridiculous. So they put that to rest. But I found it such an interesting just theory, you know. Well, I had to write about it.
Coincidences or not, that kind of stuff, I love that stuff. If you want something that'll blow your mind, have you seen the movie Snowpiercer?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Have you seen the video? And this is homework for anybody who hasn't seen this. Have you seen the video that proves that Snowpiercer is a sequel to Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory?
No, that's
you
awesome.
You will freak out when you watch this, because at first you're going to be like, this is out there. But then when they start to point out clues, it's going to start getting scarier and scarier to you, because there are things in Snowpiercer that they don't explain that suddenly make sense of anything, from why there are W's everywhere to why they need children to fix the train, because what's missing that they now need children? Maybe there was a race of something that was small too that used to do it. I mean, it's going to blow your mind when you see this whole, and it goes on for like 20 minutes, and it's going to freak you out about how this happens. You definitely have to check it out.
Oh, man.
And so what's the site? It's called, you said it was
postapocalypticmedia.com.
Media.com, okay.
If you go on there, I think, let me check it out. I think the article I wrote about how to build a post-apocalyptic car is their number one most popular article now. So it's right on the front page.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, that's been fun. The people who own that site are great, great people. And they pretty much let me write whatever I want.
Yeah.
You know, I'll say, hey, I'm thinking about writing. And they're like, yes, do it. Okay.
I love it.
All right. Well, we should probably wrap this one up. Like you said, we have so many more ideas, you know, Chernobyl and other show ideas that we could use, you know, in its own shows. So we'll definitely have to do that.
It'll be like the We're in the Bunker series. Like, actually, it would be called like the Vault 111 series or something, you know, like, because, you know, we're all isolated and in this vault, and they're trying to crack us, and they're not going to do it.
Yeah.
Either that, or we'll end up like with all the Garys trying to kill us or something. I don't know. But you know. But no, this is refreshing. It's funny, the more that the stuff with the virus was happening, the more I thought, why are we not recording? Like, not so much to like, hey, let's record off of it, but more like, you know, we got such a great community. This is the why aren't we all, you know, that we already knew each other. We already knew each other's like styles. Like, this is a perfect time to gather a community together and make sure everybody's okay.
Yeah, definitely. I agree, and I think that it's, hopefully, you know, we've been gone for so long, but the Facebook group is still there, and I'll link that in the show notes, and then also, you know, I still have that Gmail address, ttaftermath@gmail.com, and I actually checked it the other day, and there's things on there from like 2 years ago that people emailed. I'm like, whoops.
Oh, yeah.
but yeah, it's, I haven't read it in so long, and then I finally, you know, checked it out again, but, so... If you email us, you know, I promise I'll look at it and check it out. If you guys want to maybe have some show ideas or something like that, you know, we can't promise that we'll do this on the regular, but, yeah. You know, maybe a couple more times here.
Yeah, maybe a couple more times, maybe a week or two, and, you know, kind of, and you know, God willing, hopefully we're not isolating for too very long here. We're 6 months down the line, we're doing the next episode, you know, but no, we do want to, you know, maybe stay safe out there. We hope you... You know, stay positive. We're going to get through this, and we're going to do it together. And, oh, my God, what a story when this is over to be like, yeah, when I was your age, I got isolated and had to wash my hands twice a day. You know, I mean, it's like, can you imagine these stories? I mean, it's like, they even shut down Disney. You're lying, Grandpa.
Yeah, I mean, this is on the level of 9/11, I think.
It is.
And we're living it right now, like right in the middle of it. So it's an important thing. I'm sure if we record again in the near future, we'll talk about it again, you know, some updates. And hopefully the infrastructure is still around then. And
yeah, hopefully the toilet paper's not run out. We'll still have water.
Yes,
so, hopefully. But yeah.
Yeah. So thanks, everyone, for listening to us Babylon about our favorite things. And
Alas, and Babylon.
Oh, hey, that's all.
There it is. There it is.
But, yeah, we really appreciate you guys listening. We know that it's been a long, long time, but we're still alive, and we are in this bunker, and it's really starting to stink in here, so maybe, you know, send toilet paper.
20,000 caps.
Yes. All right. So everyone take it easy. I'm Sean.
And I'm Jonathan, saying stay alive out there and wash your hands.